is the Doomsday Podcast, and a special, I don't know if we want to call this an emergency podcast, but we figured we had a podcast the day the news broke, and of course Ed was all over the news when it happened, but when they announced Mike McCarthy, we did an emergency podcast. Now they've had a news conference, and we have gathered again, Frito Nation Productions, Ed Werder. And one of the really cool things is Ed Werder was able to secure a sit-down. It was short, but it was very effective, I believe, and we're going to let you hear it. But Ed got to sit down in kind of the first round of interviews that Mike McCarthy was doing, kind of one-on-one type interviews. And Ed Werder was, of course, in that crew, and then we're going to bring that to the Doomsday Podcast. Ed, as you've just come over from the Star, and as we tape this on a Friday afternoon or late afternoon, tornadoes descending upon the area, but I feel safe. I feel like here at Neighborhood Services in Omni, where you've been known to hang out a little bit, when you're staking out different...
Ezekiel Elliott's agents?
Yes. I met right before the season.
That's right.
You have...
I met Rocky Arsenault and some of his crew here.
Yeah, this is
When they flew in right before week one to negotiate the Ezekiel Elliott contract and get him in to make sure that the Cowboys had all their personnel at hand for Jason Garrett, knowing the consequences of either meeting expectations, which were, as Steven sat down and told us, you know, take the next step. Jason knows it. He understands the circumstances that we're putting on him. And they failed to do so, and they held him accountable in exactly the way Steven said they would.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that was Steven Jones, even going back to training camp, said some very interesting things to the Doomsday Podcast. And I think the Jones family, do we think Jerry, like if we truly got Jerry right now in a one-on-one situation, we don't know for certain he'd be able to tell us what a podcast was, do we? I mean, what kind of expectation do we have for Jerry to explain what a podcast is?
I don't know if Jerry certainly knows what television is. He certainly knows what radio is, and he makes great use of those.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Jerry would understand the podcasting domain. I'm not sure I do, quite honestly. I just show up, I wear a microphone like I'm doing anything else, television, radio, and I just talk until somebody tells me to stop.
Today we both have lapel.
Today they told us 5 minutes into it, stop. the circumstances were, for this Mike McCarthy sit-down, is the Cowboys decided that instead of making him available after the press conference to each television entity in the area that had made a request to have one-on-one opportunity with him, that they would do it today. I think there were seven local stations, NFL Network, ESPN, which I represented, and Cowboys TV. We all got 5 minutes. The PR department was in attendance. They monitored it carefully. They ran a timer. And I think everybody met the five-minute limit in terms of asking their final question before the five-minute period was up.
Wow.
Now, Dale Hansen came out. It was that big an event. Dale actually got out of bed in Waxahachie, drove 20 miles past WFAA.
Can you imagine?
All the way up here, I think for the first time all year. And he says to me, hey, let me see your question list. I want to see if you got any good ones. And I said, let me see your question list, because I want to see if you have any questions, because usually you just make a bunch of statements. And Dale, of course, did not disappoint. Dale threw a live grenade in Mike McCarthy's lap that not only failed to get that question answered, but it pretty much made him unwilling to answer any question going forward. And Dale forfeited some of the time that he was allocated.
He just got up and walked.
He didn't walk out. He just didn't have anything more to ask him.
Wow.
And the question and the follow-up and the follow-up to the follow-up that kind of made for an awkward circumstance was he asked him why he couldn't get along with Aaron Rodgers.
Ah. Did he do it in a very overt way? Was it just basically like that? Like, why did you have such a bad relationship?
Well, there was some level of assumption that, he didn't get along with Aaron Rodgers, and B, that he was somehow responsible for that.
That is interesting. And good for you, by the way. By the way, Dell, I bet, would have been, like, very kind to you. He's known you forever. But he took some pot shot at you recently on the air.
Are we surprised?
Yeah, I know. But jealous.
So I reminded Dale of this story today. When I was at the Dallas Morning News covering the Cowboys and had my first opportunity to go to television for CNN Sports Illustrated, I happened to be sitting next to Dale Hansen on a flight to an NFC Championship game in San Francisco. So I either had the good fortune or the misfortune, depending on your perspective, of sitting for 4 hours next to Dale Hansen. Anyway, I thought this was too good an opportunity not to ask his advice. And so I said, Dale, do you think I should stay at the Morning News, or do you think I should venture into television with this sort of unproven entity? And he gave me his opinion, which he summed up by saying, the thing I always ask myself is, would I watch it? And in this case, I have to say no. So basically, he told me not to go to television with CNN. Fortunately, I didn't listen to him, and here we are.
Would I watch it? I mean, you always have to hand it to him for saying something like that. The bombastic, arrogant, whatever you want to call it, but a friend of ours, sort of, Dell Hansen. Okay, so you have
he just... He likes us just a little less than Ellen. I think Ellen's his favorite TV show.
Yeah, he does like us, but that doesn't mean he's going to be ever say nice things
about us. Well, Dale Hansen Unplugged is his first favorite TV show.
Yes.
And Dale Hansen's Sports Sunday Special is his second favorite, and I think Ellen's third.
Yeah, Ellen may be third. He was on there after the Michael Sam story, I believe, after he did an Unplugged on that. Okay, as we continue, and if you hear a little murmuring in the background, we are at a bar.
We're at a restaurant.
A restaurant bar. It's a beautiful place. Neighborhood Services at the Omni. I recommend you coming out here and trying.
The food is excellent.
The meatballs, the
shrimp cocktail.
The shrimp cocktail's nice.
The breakfast buffet is excellent. I had it the other day while I was out here on a stakeout.
In this beautiful, they've given us a private room, but I can still hear some voices. Who do I complain to? No, I just wanted you to know, if you heard a murmuring in the background, that's what it is.
You're not going
to
mention the magic glass they serve my water in?
No, let's not get into that, although that was very funny. Okay, so Ed, just overall thoughts, as you just came over from the Star, where you were interviewing Mike McCarthy, and we're fortunate enough because we have been given permission by Ed's overlords at ESPN to use some of this audio.
Overlords? I'm not sure they would appreciate that description.
Whatever. They're your bosses.
That's better.
What was your... I mean, you've known Mike for a pretty good while.
Yeah.
The other day in our emergency podcast, you sort of gave a description of what we could expect from Mike McCarthy. Now that he's had about 4 or 5 days, 6 days, to kind of get used to the idea. Okay, I'm the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Did you encounter a relaxed Mike McCarthy, a buttoned-up Mike McCarthy? What are we seeing from Mike McCarthy as he gets his second opportunity as a head coach in the NFL?
Well, I think he was engaging, probably not as humorous as he was at his press conference, which was a stark contrast to Jason Garrett, which is no commentary really on the coaching ability of either of them. But Mike is an engaging guy. He's kind of a regular, a very approachable guy. And I got the sense in talking to him both during our 5-minute interview and before and after that he's really been very busy in terms of trying to create the coaching staff that he's going to have in his first year here in Dallas. And I think he's working from the top down. I think securing the coordinators obviously is the most important thing in his mind. I know there are some coaches over there, holdover assistants who may or may not have jobs here going forward, who are under contract, who have not met with him yet, which I think is probably a little disconcerting to them. I think Kellen Moore is going to stay as the offensive coordinator, but my sense is he's not going to call the plays. That's something Mike McCarthy has always done. He's certainly not going to turn his offense over to somebody who called plays once, but did finish number one in the NFL based on yards, but doesn't really know his system. like he knew the one that was implemented under Scott Linehan. But I think he regards Kellen Moore as a young, promising, very bright guy who has a lot to offer, especially to the veteran coaching staff I think he's assembling. Whether John Kitna remains, I don't know. I would probably lean toward keeping him, but I'm not sure that there's a place for him on the coaching staff. So that'll be an interesting thing for him to determine. But one of the most interesting things he said, and you'll hear it in the interview, is I asked him about the transition that the offensive players are going to have to make to a new system. Like, all of these players have played in one system. They've all been here, with the exception, I guess, of Witten, Jason Witten, who we don't know if he's returning or not. None of them have played in any other system but the Jason Garrett offensive system, as modified by Scott Linehan and last year Kellen Moore. But he said, and you'll hear this, him explain it, but he said he wants to build on what they have. He doesn't want to just come in and junk what they have and start all over with his system. He wants to take what they have and merge with it with what he wants to do, yeah, and build something off that going forward. So not a complete teardown, start over, yeah, project. And he also talked about Dak Prescott. I know he said that he thinks he's capable of winning a Super Bowl as a quarterback, and he thinks he can potentially be a great quarterback.
If I were him, I would not try to take too much of what they have after coming off 8-8. I would come in, you take the talent that's here, but I would not feel bad at all about bringing a lot of what he plans to bring, which is, and it's going to be fascinating, and we were asking about it the other day. We even talked to Stephen about it. You'll hear our interview with Stephen Jones here in a little bit. How do you meld the West Coast offense with what they've been doing, which was the old Zampezi, it is a different thing. How do you meld those two, or do you do a whole new thing? Okay, this is our chance now to hear Ed Werder, first and foremost of the Doomsday Podcast, but also of ESPN. But he was doing this for ESPN, and here is Ed's exclusive sit-down with Mike McCarthy, the new head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
And you talked about walking past the statues of Curly Lambeau and Vince Lombardi, and now you're going to coach in a building with a statue of Tom Landry outside. What kind of pressure comes with that?
Well, I think it just states the obvious. You know, this the history and tradition is very important to both franchises, and I think it's something you have to feel the responsibility of it. And, you know, you're the steward of this iconic franchise, and with that, it's just more of a focus and make sure that the organization is always represented the right way.
During the year that you were fired and not coaching the Packers, you stayed in Green Bay and you watched them acquire free agents who made a big difference, and they went 13-3 in your year away. How hard was that for you, given the circumstances?
I think it's really the reality of, you know, being in touch with where the team was at that point, and, you know, those decisions to bring in free agents, you know, it just didn't happen that day. I mean, those are talks that went on for quite some time. So, I mean, I think you just have to give them a lot of credit for they made the moves that they needed to do, you know, needed to make, and it's paid off for them.
32 coaches have won Super Bowls. None has won a Super Bowl with two different teams. What makes you think that this can happen here for you?
Well, I think the pieces are in place, and more, you know, how you bring them together and how you're able to keep the consistency of winning, you know, consistently to put yourself in position and make sure your team's ready for that playoff run. So there's so much that goes into winning a Super Bowl, and that's really where my time and energy is placed. It's just staying on top of all the components and really bringing everybody together to make sure we stay on the course.
The Cowboys hired you because you're an experienced coach. You're a proven winner. They think they have a team that can go deep in the playoffs. What are your expectations?
I mean, really, my expectations are to make sure we stay focused on building the best 90-man roster we possibly can, to make sure, you know, our training camp and, you know, the off-season program are as competitive as possible, and then we're sitting here, you know, at the end, making a bunch of hard decisions for the 53 and the 63. That's really my expectations, because there's a process that we have to build to get to that point. And then with that, obviously you start playing the real game. So I get the rhetoric. I think I understand it. I've fortunately been part of it for a long time, and But I've always, I think it's important to keep the time and energy and focus on the process.
In Green Bay, there was no single owner. The president, the general manager were pretty reclusive publicly, and so you were the dominant voice in the organization. Here we're kind of at the other end of the spectrum. Jerry's a big presence. How different do you think that'll be for you?
I mean, just, you know, it's only been a couple of days. Frankly, I love it. It's a breath of fresh air, and just really, you know, Jerry and his whole family, just the energy that they bring to the workplace every day has been awesome.
Steven said he anticipates you having as much influence in personnel as Bill Parcells had. Jerry talked at the press conference about we decisions. Is that reassuring to you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it was, you know, it was definitely part of the interview process. And just in a little time I've been here, I've had six, seven, eight conversations a day with Will and you know, and Todd's also been part of that, and Steven. So it's personnel is an everyday thing. So, I mean, you have to approach it that way. It goes on, you know, 24/7, 12 months at a time. So that's the focus, and I'm enjoying that part of it.
Most of the players here have only played in one system on offense. How big a transition is it going to be for them?
That's a great question. I think that's really what the interview process will bring light to. And, you know, as we go through the interviews and the direction moving forward, because I do want to try to build off all the positive things that are already in place here. So I don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. I'm not going to take that approach. I don't think that's the right approach. So I do want to make sure, if we can, take advantage of what's in place and build off that.
You coached Joe Montana, or maybe he coached you early in your career.
Yeah, Joe coached me. I was a quality control coach.
Joe coached you.
I love the credit, but it's not real. Yeah.
All right. You worked with Joe Montana, Brett Favre, and Aaron Rodgers. What from those experiences do you bring to benefit Dak Prescott?
Well, it just shows you, you know, three different body types. You know, Aaron and Brett are very similar, and really some of the things they've done from a fundamental standpoint that maybe we can tweak and apply to his game. But I think the mental approach, from what I'm told, you know, Dak is right there. So I'm really looking forward to working with him.
Yeah, he's an all-in guy.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, there it was. And, Ed, you did a good job of kind of getting in, getting out. You stayed to your 5 minutes, and I thought you got some interesting things out. And unlike others in the TV community, you didn't, like, need to hear yourself talk for a long time. You got your questions in there. The TV folks are known for some really long questions. Some radio people that I know have been known for some long questions. But good stuff coming from Mike McCarthy. You know, after speaking to him and after hearing him at his news conference, Ed, what are your I'm sort of, you know, very funny to me that Jerry, for instance, said the other day that he had this quote about, if you give other people credit, you know, it'll make you the king or something. You'll remember it better than I do. But it basically, if you'll just give other people in credit, that's what'll make you great. And that's not really what Jerry's been known for over the years. Ed, you have come up with, I don't know if you wanted me to call it this, three lies that Jerry told in his opening news conference. But let's call them discrepancies. We've both been longtime Jerry Jones observers, where there are a few things you heard in the opening news conference that gave you pause about Jerry.
Yeah, well, my first impression of the news conference is this seemed like one of the few times that Jerry held a press conference to introduce the next Cowboys coach, and he seemed genuinely impressed by the man sitting next to him. That hasn't always been the case. And in a few minutes, we're going to play a great game, because I've gone back and looked at the press conferences of all eight Jerry Jones hires as head coach, and I pulled off a quote he used to describe the man and the circumstance, and I'm going to see if you can put one statement with the right coach. So we're going to play that. But, okay, so you asked me a question. I'm going to answer it. So Jerry said he had a sign on his desk that said, quote, if you're willing to give credit to others, you'll conquer the world. My first observation is, why did you used to have that? Why is that not still there? Shouldn't that still be a guiding principle? And my second thought is, if he's being truthful about that, then why isn't it Jerry satisfied with the credit that owners like Robert Kraft seem to accept that are bestowed upon successful owners, Super Bowl championship owners? And my second point is, If that's true, then why isn't Jimmy Johnson in the Ring of Honor? Those are my two questions about that. Then he got kind of emotional, and he seemed to take offense about the general description and perception that Jerry operates autonomously and to the detriment of his head coaches when it comes to personnel. That Jerry uses his general manager club too liberally. And he said, somehow this thing has turned me into something perceived that I don't like about it, because it is a wee deal. It is a wee deal. Well, I don't think during the Bill Parcells era that Terrell Owens was a wee decision. And I don't think that during the decade of Jason Garrett that Greg Hardy and Randy Gregory were wee decisions. I think those were Jerry decisions. So that's not always true either. And then the final thing is, and I think everybody noted he took exception to this, Jerry said he wanted Mike McCarthy to pick his own staff, and he's allowing him to do that, that he's always believed in that. And then he seemed to stare down the skeptics in the audience. And I would say this. I don't think Wade Phillips hired Jason Garrett as his offensive coordinator and eventually paid him more than the head coach himself. I believe that was a Jerry decision.
Uh-huh.
So I think in those three ways,
yeah,
Jerry was not entirely truthful. There may have been some elements of the truth in what he said, but there are certainly examples of that not being the way things
yeah.
play out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think in every statement Jerry makes, there might be an element of truth. It's not always, it's not always the full truth. That it's really interesting, some of the stuff you just said about, and especially that final statement. We've heard Jerry over the years make so many statements about coaches. I thought your Jimmy thing is interesting, because if you're going to literally say, I used to have a saying that I looked at in my office where you give others credit. I like the way he phrased it. It's a good quote. I don't really know exactly. Have you looked, by the way, to see where that came from? But anyway, wherever it came from initially, you're totally right. I mean, if Jerry really wanted to do a full circle, close the loop, you know, he's in the Hall of Fame now. If he felt truly secure, as even we found out, billionaires feel insecure at times, he would have gotten the Jimmy thing done. I mean, he got freaking Gil Brandt in. I mean, that came from a previous regime. He fired Gil Brandt. Now, that's nice.
Well, whether he gets in the Hall of Fame or not is a different issue. But
correct.
Jerry controls the Ring of Honor.
Absolutely. And he makes this huge thing of the exclusivity. We got to keep this thing exclusive. Now, the thing I love about Gil has, I don't know if you followed him on Twitter recently. Gil has turned over his Twitter to somebody else because it has now become the wittiest Twitter account in the world. So somebody's doing that. And also, Gil is very, very appreciative of Jerry. Let's just say very...
beholden to Jerry.
Exactly. I think it goes that direction, but I won't get us too sidetracked there. Now, Ed, one of the great things that you and I do is we kind of team up. I was a little late for the press conference. I know that's shocking to you. Had a little trouble getting in there. May have been cussed at by a member of the PR staff. These things happen.
It's happened to me.
Yeah. May have been cussed at. That's okay.
I've even been cussed at by higher level people than that.
Wow. I got in there. I did make it in. And then right after the news conference, you and I, everybody goes, oh, the new shiny thing. Mike McCarthy. I wonder if he'll talk to us a little more. And they surround him. What did you and I do? I see you with Steven. And I kind of gave you that look. You didn't see me really. But I kind of was like, and then somebody tried to kind of come in on our deal. And I thought, is Ed, I don't want to jump in. But then I kind of thought, you know what? Ed and I are teammates. The Doomsday Podcast. And so, boom, you and I started a nice thing with Steven. Now, later in this interview, you'll hear other people. But I think you agree with me. Isn't it always good to get Steven's perspective? And something you may not hear in this podcast, it was a funny moment during the news conference when you basically said to Steven, I wanted to see if your mic was working.
Because he sat up there. We heard him. Nobody had asked him a question. The poor guy's sitting up there. He's second in command of the Cowboys. It sounds like he decided that Mike McCarthy was the guy before Jerry decided that Mike McCarthy was the guy. So, yeah, I thought, hey, let's get Steven's
funny
take on this whole thing.
I liked how you did that. That was kind of a funny moment in the news conference. And then you and I kind of surrounded Steven. And so the first part of this, you'll hear other people kind of show up and get into this thing. But the main portion, of course, is the Doomsday Boys. It's Warder and Mosley with Steven Jones. Here's a good 9 minutes with Steven Jones that happened immediately after the McCarthy news conference.
Jerry seemed quite impressed with Mike.
He was. There's nothing not to be impressed about Mike. You know, people say they've never won in two spots. Most of the time, guys, after they win some Super Bowls, they either retire or they're done. Yeah. So anyway, I think we've gotten very fortunate here. You know, the hardest thing about when coaching jobs come available is just having good coaches who are available. That's rare. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we love continuity and don't like to change out. But, you know, most of the time, good coaches are under contract.
That's where the Aikman comparison comes.
Yeah. You know, it's just fortunate.
There were rumors along the way that maybe you had visited with a college coach or two. From a due diligence standpoint, did you at least kind of explore that, or did it never even really get to that point?
I mean, we do a lot of exploring, Jerry and I do on our own, and we actually, you know, had phone calls with coaches, you know, on phones and talked about a lot of different situations. Mm-hmm. But as far as, you know, what we're willing to really talk about is just our formal interviews. But, you know, there's a lot of diligence done on this, and there was a lot of considering a lot of different things.
Does the fact that you want
a lot of different, a lot of different avenues.
Does the fact that you wanted a proven head coach, somebody with experience and a winner, indicate that you believe this team's ready to win right now?
Absolutely. I mean, obviously that factors into it. I think we've got a lot of players that are, in their prime, going into their prime, and then we've got a great group of players that are, that are ready. And, we're bullish about our roster. At the end of the day, I'll use an old Parcellism. You are what you are. So right now we're an 8-8 football team. But we believe that, we can improve and that we can take the next step. And, you know, I think we were pretty clear with that, you know, throughout the season that, you know, we wanted to take the next step. And so unfortunately we didn't. And but we do think we've got now the right guy. I mean, no one respects Jason. Coach Garrett more than I do, and what he's brought to the table. But, it was unfortunately, it was just time to make that change.
What gives you hope that you can transition to a new style, new type of offense when you've done, similar things for a long time?
You know, I don't think anything's guaranteed that we're transitioning into a new offense. I think we're, as anything goes, just as we did from Scott to Kellen, as we did, before Scott, you evolve. And we did a lot of good things on offense this year, but we weren't good enough to get in the playoffs and make a run. So, there's some things we need to be better at, and I think Mike's going to be great at helping this thing evolve into hopefully something even better.
In the past, there's always been this split between the West Coast offense and the timing offense, but you feel. Over time, those two have kind of come closer together, and they're
I didn't mean to cut you off, David. Sorry.
No.
It's called evolution. I just think you're seeing offenses that are taking parts of college games and RPOs, and you're seeing the more athletic quarterbacks. You're seeing all these things evolve, and I think to say that this will not be a sea change in terms of our offense. I don't think. Mike will speak to all that, and that's obviously. Part of why we hired him. He's one of the great offensive X and O guys in the game, and certainly created a lot of offense up there in Green Bay with Brett Favre and with Aaron Rodgers and what they were able to accomplish is special. I think he's right up there right behind Belichick in terms of you know, the most playoff wins and the success that he's had. So, you know, we feel comfortable, giving him the keys and let's see where we go.
Stephen, get a little bit of clarity. Why two meetings with Jason Garrett and allowing him to continue the exit interviews? Did you have another coach in mind? When did you make contact with Mike Moore? I'm just looking for some clarity in the timeline.
There's really no clarity for Jason. We had communication with Jason every step of the way, and we wanted to be very respectful, and you know, pretty much all of our action was in line with what Jason wanted, and we had nothing but the utmost respect for him, and we used his timeline, and he understood that we were having to do our job too, and you know, he knew exactly what we were doing, as a matter of fact.
Was there ever a possibility that he could stay here? In other words, you guys said, let's go through the exhaustive search, and
he knew we were moving down the road with other coaches.
Stephen, what do you think Mike brings in terms of toughness and accountability?
I think all of the above. I mean, I don't think you create a championship caliber football team that went to playoffs year in and year out and went to championship games and ultimately won a Super Bowl if you don't adhere to those type of concepts, whether it's accountability, whether it's commanding a room, whether it's discipline, whether it's culture. I think he's proven he can do it and do it real well and sustain it for a long period of time.
What was the moment like for you, Stephen, when that Mike and Jerry talked about it, and that it finally just became obvious to both of them that this is where it was going to go? What was that moment like?
I think it evolved over the course of 12 hours. I mean, we rolled in there about 1 o'clock, and I think we finished up about 1 o'clock when we were shaking hands and getting everything done. But I don't think there was ever just this aha moment. I will say this, when we walked in the room right away, we were very impressed. Neither Jerry nor I had ever spent a lot of time other than just a casual hello. Meeting him, but obviously knew of him from him standing up in meetings, but at owners' meetings. And, of course, we had a lot of mutual friends, coaches, personnel people in the football business that were, had nothing but, A-plus things to say about Mike. And, of course, we had done a ton of diligence on both Marvin and him. But I had a really, really, really good relationship with Marvin and had been very impressed with my time with him on the competition committee. And Jerry and I talked about it, and he wanted to get to know Marvin even better and really felt like he, fit that bill of a head coach who's had success and, had the experience. But it just evolved over the course, over the course of the day. And, you could feel that there was a good chemistry there and, everything seemed to, as we rolled through everything, most of these coaches have a way they want to go through it. And then you can imagine the questions, especially from Jerry. And sometimes I feel like they're interviewing Jerry, too. He'll take up some hours in terms of his stories and how he thinks and that type of thing. But that's important, too, that Mike gets to know what we're about. What Jerry's about, what we're about as an organization. As Mike said, he spent a lot of time with my brother and Will and Todd, and they were answering questions for him in terms of how we operate as an organization, and things just kept seeming to be the right fit.
Going into the interview offseason for you guys with free agent decisions, how soon now do you get going with that since the coaching decisions are made, and how much is Mike a part of that now with the decisions you have to make?
Just like Bill Parcells or any other head coach, he'll be very involved. As a matter of fact, I want to put words in his mouth. He said, it sounds like I'm going to have a bigger voice than I had in Green Bay in terms of how we go about building consensus. But obviously not going to talk about staff today, but we've been working on the staff for days now. He's rolling up his sleeves right away. He went right home to get packed up, and, he's coming back boots on the ground, ready to go to work. And, as Will McClay's doing his job, going full speed ahead in terms of personnel. And, of course, we have to be looking at our own players versus, free agents. And as we all know, we've got a couple of contracts out here that are very important that we continue to
work to get done. And so it's, you know, it's the NFL. There's no off season. So everybody be full speed ahead in terms of getting this team ready.
The fact that you've identified some experienced coaches, former head coaches, you know, it looks like it's going to be a veteran staff, the guys he's bringing in, and you guys are rounding up to come in with him.
Well, Mike's just, you know, he's a great football coach. He's a football coach. He's a great football coach. He's been around great football people his whole career. And then, of course, you know, as he did last year, he sat for a year and really contemplated what he wanted in a staff and who he'd want to be a part of it. And I think we're going to be very pleased with everybody will be real pleased with the staff that he puts together. I think it's going to be a great group of coaches, still work to do, and certainly – you know, Mike will make great choices there, and he's ready to share the directions we're headed. And you know, I know he'll be in front of you guys to share that.
All right, there is that. And
are you ready to play my game yet?
Yeah, I want to play that. Let's do that now. We actually have a fired member of this coaching staff to possibly hear from. Someone who was sent packing that I was able to track down, had a little interview with on my my radio gig. And so we'll get to that. Sanjay Lau, Cowboys wide receivers coach, will get you some interesting information on, he weighed in on Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, Kellen Moore, Jason Garrett, a lot of interesting things there. Let's play the game, Ed, if you will. And so I can play this properly. Will you go ahead and run over the eight coaches that that Jerry, okay, I got Jimmy, let me do this, see if I can do
Let's
this.
Do them in
Jimmy
order.
Barry, hold yep. on, Jimmy yep. Barry, Chan.
Correct.
Okay, Campo.
Dave Campo.
Okay, Parcells.
Parcells, yep.
Okay, and then Wade. Phillips.
Jason Garrett.
And then Jason Garrett, and now.
And now McCarthy.
McCarthy, okay. Have I missed anything?
No.
Okay.
You have
got that. These are the Jerry Jones, and this is going to be a little game, what we call Ed's going to read the quote of something. Ed went back and looked at all these news conferences Jerry had done, things he said about specific head coaches. Ed's going to say the quote, and I'm going to guess who he said it about.
And the basis of this is to demonstrate the level of hyperbole that typically takes place when Jerry Jones has one of these press conferences introducing his new head coach.
All right.
So
let's do
we
this.
We all heard the wonderful things he said about Mike McCarthy, so yeah. We won't even include him.
All right.
But the other coaches he hired, here's the first one. He is qualified and capable. We have the right man. He's highly innovative, creative mind. Here's a big hint. On the offensive side of the ball, he's a proven play caller and someone who has done it in big games.
Okay, I can eliminate some people there immediately. And I'm going to go, okay, this has to be either Garrett or Gailey. Okay, this is Jason Garrett or Gailey. I'm going to go with Chan.
You are correct.
Whoa.
That means you're going to get two right because the Jimmy Johnson one is so famous that we all know what that one is.
Uh-huh,
so let's do that one next to eliminate the mystery.
All right.
What this coach will bring us, he says the name, will be worth more than if we had five first-round draft choices and five Heisman Trophy winners. History will show that one of the finest things that ever happened to the Cowboys is...
Jimmy Johnson. But see, that was a great moment. Jerry's, that quote that we talked about, that was Jerry giving someone like
credit.
Enormous credit.
Value of a head coach.
Yes.
Who would have thought that Jerry would so devalue
all
it?
All right. Let's see what's next.
Okay. This person was the most qualified coach in our sport that you could draw up if you were drawing your own Rembrandt.
this one guy's my friend, so I'm going to eliminate Campo. That's not nice. I'm going to eliminate Garrett. I'm going to eliminate Wade. And I'm going to eliminate... That does not sound like Switzer. I'm going to go with Bill Parcells.
You are correct again. Three for three. This is amazing. You're going to get to pay this bill. All right. The guy next to me has my personal and total trust and commitment, and the guy next to me is your coach of the Dallas Cowboys, and he just happens to be as talented and happens to be as special for this situation at this time for the Dallas Cowboys, which is kind of a Jerry awkward sentence that doesn't really make sense, but...
At this time...
I hope you're going to get one of these wrong.
I know. Okay, I'm going to say... For this time, oh, gosh. Okay, so this could be Switzer, Campo, or Garrett. It's a very tepid type. It's not like the, it's not a Rembrandt type thing like Parcells, so I'm going to go with Campo.
Switzer.
Ah!
Okay. All right, you got one wrong.
All right, all right.
All right. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
We needed to get it right. In my mind, we got it right. This team is best served now, next week, next month, and next season by an NFL head coach with experience that knows the game, that candidly knows the personnel playing the game right now.
Yeah. That doesn't help me because the generic
nature...
There
have been too many crises in these hires.
Generic nature of Campo or Garrett... Wait, or Phillips. I haven't said Wade yet.
You got three possibilities. It's either Campo, Phillips, or Garrett.
Say it one more time, that one.
We needed to get it right. In my mind, we got it right. This team is best served now, next week, next month, and next season by an NFL head coach with experience that knows the game, that candidly knows the personnel playing the game right now.
Wade.
You are correct, sir. All right, let's see if you can tell the difference between Dave Campo and Jason Garrett. I'm trying to decide which one of these I'm going to give you. All right, here we go. The overwhelming majority of input I have received had a very common thread, and the theme was very simple. This is perfect. You have a man on your staff who is very smart, extremely talented, and ready to be a head coach in the NFL.
Both of those guys were already on the staff.
That's correct. Very nice. No hint there.
So that doesn't really...
The overwhelming majority of input I received had a very common thread, and the theme was very simple.
That doesn't ring a bell. And I came on with the Parcells era, so I'm going to go with Campo.
You are correct. It is Dave Campo. Only one miss. Outstanding performance.
Oh, my God.
So here's what he said about Garrett.
Yeah.
I do believe, this is Jason Garrett at his press conference, I do believe he has the temperament. He has the disposition to affect a culture change. I think that is important. We all know men's styles are different. His style is one that I feel could be very effective.
Okay. All right.
So you were right, and Jerry was wrong. And for that, he gets... 10 years of non-winning football. three playoff appearances in a full decade. Jason Garrett coached all but 8 games of the last decade, which goes down as the decade in which the Cowboys won the fewest playoff berths in their history with three.
Were you the person, you always come up and with the help of ESPN.
Was that not a fun game, by the way?
I love it. I love it. I think our people loved it. ESPN Stats of Info and you, y'all come up with some really good stats. What was the one where, like, during the McCarthy era in Green Bay and the Garrett era in Dallas, it wasn't the plus-minus points, it was the plus-minus takeaways. Does that ring a bell with you?
No, but
I've heard a million things recently, but that one jumped into my head.
Here's
the other
one
day.
I think is interesting
okay.
that compares McCarthy's final 2 years in Green Bay and Garrett's last 2 years here. One of Mike McCarthy's undoings in Green Bay was his inability to beat good teams. Over his final 2 seasons with the Packers, Green Bay went 3-14-1 against teams that finished the season with a winning record. 3-14-1. Jason Garrett, in such games the last 2 years of his Cowboys coaching career, went 5-10, a little bit better, including 2-6 this year.
Ooh.
But in games in his career against teams with a winning record, Jason Garrett went 25-44. So he mostly beat up on bad teams or mediocre teams.
Wow.
He did not frequently win, or not with regularity win, against the better teams in the NFL.
Against successful type teams. Now, that's an interesting one. I'm going to now reach way back into my head, and I apologize to anyone I'm not crediting here, but this one was one I love, Ed. I think you'll like, too. The football. What did Garrett talk about constantly? The value of the football, protecting the football, takeaways. When he first got the job, that was a huge thing. I heard one the other day that you'll like. It was during Mike McCarthy's time in Green Bay, on a plus minus type situation in takeaways, was a plus 93. Okay? Jason Garrett was a minus 5. I mean, you look like, why did this guy have success? Why? What about this guy? Why did he not break through? That's like an enormous number in like the NFL. So anyway, that was a number that just grabbed my attention the other day that I happened to come across. Okay, we got some final comments, Ed, you and I need to make. Let's do one more thing. I want to hear from a former Cowboys wide receivers coach. He got fired about 3 or 4 days ago. And on the day after he got fired officially, he was hoping, in fact, he hoped that the new regime might keep him on. He is the wide receivers coach for the Cowboys, Sanjay Lal. The day after he got fired, he said, yeah, I'll come on with you. And I thought that was very kind and generous, or gracious, whatever you want to call it.
I've always had good interactions with him and think he's a very highly regarded person around the league. I think the fact that Amari Cooper disappeared for the last 2 months of the season probably cost him his job as much as anything.
Yeah.
Other than, you have to understand that Mike McCarthy coming in is going to want some coaches he's familiar with.
His people.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's funny, Randall Cobb was at the news conference the other day. It's kind of like he's a free agent. Like, hey, coach, remember me. I'm here. This worked out pretty well.
It's all about options.
Cobb had a great bounce back season. Gallup had a huge season.
Yep.
Cooper put up good numbers. He just faded down the stretch. And so Sanjay weighed in on all of those things in an interview I had with him on my daily radio show, ESPN Central Texas. Here is that interview.
As he knows, in the nomadic world of NFL coaching, things happen and regimes change. And my friend Sanjay Lal, the wide receivers coach for the Cowboys, is now in the market. He's out there in the marketplace. Sanjay, are you... is the phone ringing? Have you been able to are you able to transition immediately when something like this happens, or does it take a little time? What are these couple of few days going to be like?
Yeah, it's been quick because I honestly thought I was staying till really 2 days ago, so I have to quickly get my competitive mode into getting a job rather than trying to make Michael Gallup take another leap. So as a coach, you just have to do it and change your mindset.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that name up. That's a guy who he already made a huge leap this season, and over 1,000 yards, and really the numbers were strong. Now, the bottom line numbers is what, unfortunately, and of course, you came well into the Jason Garrett era. You got a couple of years with these guys. Where did you see Gallup specifically make the biggest leap this year? I know the numbers kind of jump out at you, but from a standpoint of either being better on his routes or being a more mature receiver, what were the biggest things that he did that allowed him to have so much success in his second year in the league?
I would start with his routes. Really, he started understanding his own body. Like, we put a lot of emphasis on exploding off the ball. And when you do that to a receiver at the top of the route, you're somewhat out of control because you've never been told to run your stem as fast as I believe and we believe we wanted them to do it. So sometimes that's a process. What he's really started doing, and if you watch his in cuts, he can hit that speed turn really at almost top speed, and he really got really, really good at body control, dropping his hips, understanding where his leverage was, and just ripping through cuts. And in turn, that gave him a lot of confidence to go attack the ball. I would say that was a big part. And then just understanding how to defeat a defense, how DBs were playing him, understanding that how to manipulate their hips. Like if you look at the cover zero touchdown he caught in the Redskin game, he stayed straight on his stem and trusted as he was closing the cushion that the DB would flip his hips towards him and he was able to cross face. That was a huge growth for him. One, recognizing the coverage, two, understanding how to defeat it. And then his athletic abilities came into play. He caught the ball, ripped through some contact, and scored. So I would say all of the above. He just did a great job this year.
Sanjay Lal, the Cowboys wide receivers coach, now out on the market, did a really nice job for the last couple of years coaching the wide receivers. Coach, what was that, that had to be very surreal, strange, probably not the first time you've been through a regime change, but to be in the dark, not only about, okay, who's the new coach going to be, but the Cowboys, you know, they do things a little differently, as you probably found. They didn't exactly move quickly to end things with Garrett. What were you hearing through this process, and how tough was that on you and the family as you kind of waited to get some form of closure on this?
Yeah, it was different. When I left Indy, they let go of Chuck Pagano Sunday night right after the game. And then the next morning, Chris Ballard came to all the offices and spoke to each coach individually and explained, like, hey, you're staying or hey, you're not. So that really never happened because our head coach was still, I think, fighting for his job. But my nature is to go in my office, do work, and keep my head down rather than get into the what-ifs and all that. So I just kept it low-key. But to be honest, every day you would hear something different, and then there was, like, periods of hope, periods of, well, maybe I'll stay even though there's a change. And you just get involved in that, and in the meantime, you're just trying to get your stuff ready in case the worst case happens and you have to go interview again. So
we lost Sanjay there, and we'll get him back. We'll get him back on the horn there. He may have gone through a low area, and Stephen, as only Stephen can do, got Sanjay going again. We might have gotten a bad sell there, Sanjay, but we were talking about you kind of getting back in there and now being ready for the interview process. Before we kind of move on and talk about what's next for you, I also want to ask you about Amari. Amari Cooper, obviously, at times this season looked like one of the best wide receivers in the league. But for whatever reason, even though he was y'all did a great job of transitioning him in last year and getting him acclimated quickly, his numbers dropped off precipitously in the final, whatever it was, 7-8 games of the season. What do you think was the biggest reason for that? Was it an injury? Was he banged up? What do you think kind of allowed him to struggle like that down the stretch?
So I'll first say, if I could pinpoint it, it wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the hard part, answering you completely honestly.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, he's got an ankle sprain. Well, let's fix that and figure out what he can do. I think you got to go back to training camp, honestly, that he missed most of training camp. And then he battled some injuries in the middle part of the season. And quite honestly, he wasn't able to practice like he should have, really, for most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, was he banged up? Yes. Is everyone banged up? Yes. Is he in the best shape he could be in? No. And no fault of his own, he wasn't able to practice. It's really starting in training camp. And then there was a few weeks there where he didn't practice till Friday. And even on Friday, he was just managing things. So in fairness to him, I don't think he was at his highest and best. And as a coach, you wrestle with, is he toughing it out and playing when some guys wouldn't, or could he just shrug this off like it's nothing? You don't really know. I was once told it's very easy to be tough with another man's body, and you never want to make those determinations for the player because that's how you lose a guy. He's genuinely fighting through things and can't give any more than he is. What right do you have to call him out on that? So I know I'm not really answering it, but the answer is I don't have a concrete answer. I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. And then when you're not at your best physically, does your confidence wane a little bit? Are you that dog that you were against Green Bay when you're feeling good? So that's my answer, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to clarify, when you say he wasn't in shape, you're not saying that, are you saying that when he came to training camp, he wasn't really in shape, or are you just saying he wasn't like peak physically injury-wise?
No, so let me clarify, because things always get taken out of context.
Well, that's
so,
why I'm asking.
Yeah, no, he came into training camp in great shape.
Okay.
I'm saying when we got, what do we get, a week and a half in and he got hurt?
Yes.
With the heel. So he's really out for 3.5-4 weeks. And if you can't run for 3.5-4 weeks, you're always playing catch-up in your fitness. So instead of being able to go 10 plays hard, maybe it's down to 4 plays hard. And then you get these nagging things as the season goes. So to clarify, so things don't get misread, he came into camp in great shape. The nature of all his injuries lessened that. And he battled it all season.
Yeah, exactly. And it'll be interesting. They'll have decisions to make moving forward. You were a big part of the third down. For people that don't know that, Sanjay Lau, Cowboys wide receivers coach, joining us. He'll move on to his next gig as the Cowboys have a regime change. You did the third down offense and were, you know, the passing game, all of that. And you had a huge role in that. And you'll put up some really good numbers on third down. Let me ask you this, though. You got a brand new play caller. He'd never done it before. Now, you've been around. You had some people. You know, Garrett has been a play caller in the NFL before, but you were breaking in a young guy. How is that? Like the operation of that. I'm not even talking about during the week. When you get in a game and you got a brand new play caller, what is that like? Did it work fine? Was it difficult? What was that experience like?
That's a good question, because when we went into the first game, I was like, I wonder how this is going to go, because I've been with 11 coordinators in 13 years, and some very big names, very established guys, and some of them had great feel for calling games, and some of them's strengths were more on the designing plays, and the play calling was not as refined or as fluid as some.
All right, Ed, we've hit this thing from a lot of different areas. Just final thoughts as you look at some of your notes. You had a big McCarthy interview today that we've already heard. We talked to Steven. We got a new regime. Interesting stuff in the works. Amari Cooper, free agent. Dak Prescott, free agent. Byron Jones, free agent.
I mean,
Robert Quinn, guy who was, you know, he obviously led them in sacks.
Leighton Vander Esch, uncertain. Jason Witten, uncertain. Sean Lee, uncertain. A lot of uncertainty. And, you know, it's interesting, and you kind of hinted at this when we were talking before we started the show, and that is that the coaching change here with Mike McCarthy, that creates new leverage for Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott has more leverage now because he needs to be out here leading this transition to a new offense, however, whatever form that takes, because Mike said, as I mentioned in the interview, that he wants to build on what they had. So that's reassuring, I'm sure, to the players and to Jerry and the coaches. But he needs Dak Prescott here from day one, more than ever. More than if they brought Garrett back, they need their quarterback to be a part of their entire offseason. And their offseason starts earlier now that they've made a coaching change than it otherwise would. So the front office needs to get this deal done with Dak Prescott.
I think April 6 is the number I saw mentioned today as when they can start, 2 weeks earlier than most teams because they have a new regime. And that is interesting. And then Stephen saying on one of his various radio shows today on the flagship station of the Cowboys, something along the lines of, before the season, we got really, really, really close to getting a deal done. He recognized we need Dak. He's our quarterback. We have to get this thing done. So the
thing is so they need to get Dak Prescott done for the reasons we just mentioned. But Dak's incentive is lacking. His leverage is, I want to wait and see what happens with Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, who can get new contracts for the first time as NFL players. And they were already top 10 first-round picks. No, I guess Deshaun was a little bit later. Patrick Mahomes was 10. I think Deshaun Watson was 13, I think is right. So Dak Prescott holds all the cards now in this deal. He had his best season ever. He almost broke the franchise passing record. Came within a yard. Whoever thought that Dak Prescott was going to break passing record set by Tony Romo? Honestly, and I've been as big a Dak guy as there has been, I never thought he would challenge those sorts of records as a pocket passer or as a thrower in the NFL. Credit to him and his coaching and his coaches. But he's got all the leverage now. He had his best season ever. They've made a coaching change. They need him to be involved. And they probably should sign him before Mahomes and Watson sign their new contracts.
We've never seen a quarterback with this much leverage coming off an 8-8 season.
It's historic. All right, here's my final. I think we're to the final thought stage.
Yes.
Here's my final wrap-up thought on this hire. Including Mike McCarthy, there have been 32 different head coaches to win a Super Bowl. 13 of those coaches went on to take a different job with a different team. Only Bill Parcells and Mike Holmgren went to the Super Bowl again with their second teams. None of the 32 coaches has ever won a Super Bowl with a second team. That's the challenge for Mike McCarthy.
That sounds like something you would have, like, brought up to Mike. But
I did ask him. You heard the interview. I mean, I asked him about what makes him think he can be the first one to do it with this team.
Yeah, that's true. The first time to break through. Ed, my final thought is that great work by you. I think that McCarthy is a safe choice. Is he an exciting choice? Maybe not. Is he more accomplished as a head coach than Garrett was when he was hired? Well, obviously. More accomplished than Wade Phillips? Absolutely. More accomplished than Campo? You bet. Barry Switzer? That's a hard one because Barry was one of the greatest college coaches of all time.
But he did it in college. He didn't do it in the NFL. Mike McCarthy's done it in the NFL.
I'm with you. But, I mean, I don't want to downplay that because what Barry Switzer did in college football is one of the greatest coaching jobs in the history. But it's just interesting. Jimmy had won a national title at Miami when he gets hired.
What I've done in television doesn't make me a great podcaster, even though I am. It just didn't make me that. All right, let's tip our waitresses.
Tip your waitresses. We want to thank the Neighborhood Services restaurant. There's a few of them in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. There's a really nice one out here at the Omni in the shadows of the Ford Center and the Star out here. And they opened up a beautiful private room to us to do a podcast in moments after Ed wrapped up a one-on-one with Mike McCarthy. Thanks to Frito Nation Productions, doing a great job getting out here and taping all this. He's had a very busy day, and he's just a man who's overcome illness and all sorts of other things.
personal issues.
He's had a lot of, the man's overcome a lot of adversity in life, and he's just done a heck of a job. Big weekend, NFL, it's going to be fun. And we're glad to kind of bring you all this. If you find any more insight on the Mike McCarthy era, you let us know. We don't think it's out there, and we think that's one of the reasons that the Doomsday Podcast has become the number one podcast in the NFL. Great to be with you. For Ed Werder and Mark Friedel Friedman, it is Matt Mosley saying good night from Frisco.